And we are back. Thank you for joining us for another edition of the Daily Dots. Joined as always by the Brain Trust, Mr. Chase Taylor. Not a lot today. Another kind of quiet day. Some interesting earnings announcements, some interesting stock gyrations off of that. But S&P finished flat on the number. NASDAQ was down 18 basis points. Dow was up like what, 20? Or we don't talk about the Dow. Dow is pointless. IWM got hit. Russell 2000 got hit by about what, 50 basis points?
Yeah, 0.58. And then Mag 7 was down 0.5%, which most notable thing maybe you could find on the day.
Yeah. Can you turn your volume up, Chase? Do you have a way to do that? You're coming in very quiet.
How about now?
Sounds better. Yep. So sorry about that. It was a little technical difficulty. We're not even going to edit that out. It's the Daily Dots. We're coming at you. We're coming at you live and fast here. Anyway, let's see. Not a lot in rates. Little tick up in rates, but you've had pretty. I mean, nothing really big. But you've seen a pullback in yields ever since Powell came out and talked last week. I don't really see anything, you know, nothing moves in a straight line. That's kind of what I'd say about rates today. I don't think it was a big enough move one way or the other. I wouldn't even say that this is really interesting. Dollar back above 105.50 last I looked today. DXY above 105.50, that is. Again, I think it's interesting that it peaked below 105 for a second and then bounced right back above that. But again, not really big moves any one way or the other. I don't think there's a lot to read in on that. DXY is probably watching the jobs report just like everybody else is, and the inflation report's coming in. What else do we have? What else? Did you notice anything else today? Was there any data out today that I'm not aware of? I didn't see anything.
No, all we had was mortgage applications, which I mean, they were decent week over week, but they're still at awful levels, still down year over year. So nothing to really point out there. That's literally it for data in the U.S. at least.
You know what's interesting? In anytime you're looking at one-off earnings reports, I think that you need to – I know you need to be very careful. No, I don't think these earnings reports are nearly as important as – the companies we were talking about yesterday, right? Apple, Starbucks, and Nike, just because they're so bellwether. But I think it's interesting that Airbnb and Uber both got rocked today.
I feel like a lot of stuff did.
Yeah. And off of bad earnings, right? Then I go and contrast that with the GDP, the Atlanta Nowcast for the GDP cast from the Atlanta Fed saying we're running at 4.6% GDP. Now, you would know this, but I mean, you could answer this more definitively than I can. But from my recollection, the Atlanta GDP numbers have probably been the most accurate coming out of any Fed, right?
Yeah, they whiffed this last one like everyone did badly. But yeah, they've been, say, last 2 years, like very solid, better than Wall Street.
I could be wrong about this, but this is exactly what I was talking about when I was saying that, look, you could have parts of the economy in recession and still see positive GDP prints just from the deluge of cash. Let's assume that the Atlanta Nowcast for GDP is correct. Kind of exactly what I'm seeing, right? Mortgage applications in the tank, issues in real estate, Apple, Nike, and Starbucks missing earnings, throw Airbnb and Uber on there. That doesn't give you a pretty picture about the consumer. It's not a definitive picture. But it doesn't give you a good picture about the consumer, right?
Yeah, not to mention Shopify, Affirm. Like, there was some bad numbers out there. I mean, Shopify was down 19%.
Oh.
Whew. Yeah, Affirm was 10%. So, yeah, it was like everything that came up to me, it was like pretty brutal.
And yet,
I'm kind of like you, though. I'm just trying not to be like all selection bias or like headline today bias about it, but because earnings are beating writ large, but.
Well, we can't. And the reason we can't is because of, you know, we'll keep reiterating this and it's amazing. And look, we fight that. I shouldn't say we. I think we is accurate, but I know I do. You know, I fight the impulses that were built up in my education and my learning of this market and all that kind of stuff. And we just have to accept the fact that we ain't living in yesteryear. This is a different deal. And just because we see, I would say in normal times, if you showed me, now it's hard because you'd have to look at equivalent companies, but if we went back, you know, let's say 25 years, and you showed me a scenario where companies like Apple, Nike, Starbucks, Uber, Airbnb are posting historically bad numbers. Well, I say historically for Apple, but significantly bad numbers, right? Numbers, it's not a one-off quarter type issue. You show me all that, and I'm going, hey, recession, right? It's coming, right?
Right.
Problem is, I don't think most people really realize the definition of recession, what it means. It's a GDP computation. That's it, right? So we could have an environment. I think you could even have an environment where you see unemployment going up, not drastically, but I think you could see unemployment going up. I think you could see an earnings recession. I mean, we're not close to one right now based on this quarter, but I think you could even see an earnings recession and still see positive GDP prints north of 3%. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, to me, like a recession more than anything is a drawdown in employed people.
Well, you agree?
You know, at the end of the day. Yeah. By the way, TripAdvisor is another one, 28.7% today.
Hey, and look, those are significant earnings numbers because it really points to service and travel, which everybody has been kind of using as the, you know, the replacement leg to their economic stool, going, hey, look, this is fine, right? This is, you don't have a recession when, you know, travel numbers are like this. When you see the reduction in credit card lending, one of the things I was talking about that, right? You saw credit card balances dip down. Those credit card balances didn't dip down because people were paying them down. Those credit card balances dip down because credit's getting pulled back on the consumer side.
And the defaults are getting written off too.
Right. So that's not a positive. Now, if you saw credit card balances going down at the same time a bunch of great economic reports were going out and credit looks strong, then that would be a bullish sign. This isn't one of them. But the real question is, you know, I continue, the further along we go, the more and more I'm thinking about this bifurcated economy where you're going to have a section of the economy that acts, behaves, looks, smells, feels like recession, you know, where they're sailing into some serious headwinds. And then I think as long as this deluge of spending, this tidal wave of spending continues to happen, you're going to have other things. At least this is what I'm expecting, and this is what we've seen thus far. You're going to have other things that look like it's just a runaway bull market. Does that jive with kind of the way you're seeing things?
Yeah, and it goes back to what we've talked about a good bit with, like, sure, like you have these pockets of weakness, but you also have a really big deficit, which makes it so hard to have, you know, serious weakness. And to be fair to TripAdvisor, that was more of a, I think of a, they were supposed to have a sale go through that's not going to go through than a pure like revenue problem or something. But even then, like that's seeing travel leisure kind of have a pullback, and you can actually see it in hotel data where revenues per available room are starting to get hit for the first time since the pandemic. So that area is actually pulling back.
I'll tell you this. So again, purely anecdotal, but my wife and I are taking a quick trip. She and I usually take usually 8 to 9 day, somewhere in that ball, 7 to 9 day trip without the kids, usually every February. This year, because of what we had going on with selling our house and things like that, it just got put to the wayside. So we're taking a shorter abbreviated trip, but we're going away tomorrow. I will still, for those of you, I know that probably induces panic in the Know Your Risk Radio audience as well as the Daily Dots. We're going to keep cranking them out. Chase is going to handle some of the Daily Dots. I'll be involved with some of them as well. The show will continue as normal. So no panic. Nobody needs to freak out. But one thing I did notice, man, and it was really interesting, because we're going down to Cabo. That's a pop. It's close here on the West Coast. The availability and the price, I had to double and triple check things because prices are noticeably lower just in the last 16 months. Noticeably lower. Where I was sitting there going, and I'm trying to be fair here. I'd say a good 30 to 40% off the peak price that we saw last time. Now, one thing I got to put into the consideration there is we're going at a slightly different time, right? So As opposed to going in February, we're going now. But we look back and we're comping that out. I remember we were looking in February. Prices had already were down significantly from where they were the previous year too. It clearly looks like that impulse is slowing down some. Here's the problem that I've – so saying all that and having been thinking about all these things, I don't really know what any of that means. Let's say all of those are legitimate signals we're getting and we're picking up on economic weakness. What does that mean today? I'm not really entirely sure what that means. What it makes me think now is that it may be time for us to put back on that pile of two-year treasuries. That's kind of the way I'm thinking. Yet I'll be honest with you, I'm not even sure about that. This is such a confusing board. I mean, I don't want to.
Yeah, I was one more push up in 2 year yield. So it's like really wanting that trade, and then naturally, like, it started working before we got that last push that I was looking for, which happens all too often.
Yeah, but there's still a lot of meat left on that bone. I mean, that thing hasn't capitulated at all. More importantly, due to Chairman Powell's comments, I'm not nearly as afraid of the downside as it relates to 2 year. Now, do not extrapolate 2 year out to 10 year. I am still of the belief, though, this is the way that I see it happening. We have been for years and years and years sitting there waiting, some of us hoping for signs or clues that the Fed is beginning to lose control. And the reason I say we've been hoping, I mean, I think there are the U.S. fatalists out there that, you know, are just permabears because they don't agree with the U.S. system. They just want it to go down. The reason I was hoping for that was just a return to normal, which I soon realized wasn't going to come, that this is a brave new world and you just have to, you know, you got to deal with it like a big boy. But I would assume, I think every single bet that has been made about the Fed losing control of some or part of monetary policy or the yield curve, whatever the case may be, it has been a wrong bet. And the way that I'm sitting here thinking about it today is, until you see that happen, until you see something break, you have to assume that they're going to be able to keep the ball in the air. Do you know what I mean? Like, there have been so many times. So if you put a gun to my head, I would think that when they do cut, I would think the entire rate complex is going to fall with it. It shouldn't, right? Like, it's not intellectual, you know, like you're like, isn't the Treasury going to have to pay the bill at some point? And I think they very possibly could. It just seems like a very, very concave investment outlook to be betting on duration here based on the rate cuts.
Right. And if we do get a big move lower in yields in a recession, you know, you're probably going to have a 12% to GDP deficit. So to me, that would be the trade of a lifetime to short duration after it has a monster rally.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you're like, I'm like, I'm pretty torn on what it does in a recession. I would think it has an initial pretty nice rally, like, just because that's what it's what it's always done. It's what it will do. But I have no idea how long it would take people to kind of look over at the deficit and say, no, wait a second. But I just feel like they will.
You know what? This brings up a perfect example of what I was talking about in an interview today, where I was saying that we have to think about things differently. You and I have been talking about this a lot, but we have to think about things differently, because I would expect when the Fed cuts for the entire, like I was saying, for the entire Treasury complex, for yields to fall. That's what I would expect. But not because they should, because they always have, right? Meaning, yeah, there is so much muscle memory built up in that. Economic weakness by Treasury, especially now because they're yielding 4.5 to 5. You got to get in there, right? This kind of goes back to a conversation we were having a little bit yesterday, you and I, on the Daily Dots, I believe, if I remember correctly, which is, you look back, I think the world is still adjusting to the idea and what it means to be fully fiat. Did you see the clip from, and I'm always forgetting the name of it. Is it Finding the Money? The Stephanie Kelton, MMT, Modern Monetary Theory video, where they interview Biden's head of, his head of his economic advisory council or something like that. And he just is stepping all over himself. You know the clip I'm talking about?
It is called Finding the Money.
Yeah, Finding the Money. It was funny to listen to him trip over the questions in that. Not because I want to point out the fact, oh, he's an idiot. I'm not trying to dunk on the guy. But it's a perfect illustration of what you and I were talking about yesterday, meaning whether he knows it or not, he's referring to machinations and mechanisms and practices that, for lack of a better term, really are tradition more than anything else, because in a fiat world, you don't need to do a lot of these things. And the reason I'm pointing that out is because, yes, we've been off the gold standard for 50 years, right? But our government hasn't really taken advantage of it. I used your analogy today on that interview of an elephant being tethered to the stake, right? Meaning, I think you're at a point now where the elephant damn well knows he's untethered. And he's running around making some noise, right? Think about the clip in Dumbo when his mom finally gets ticked off and has enough, you know? Disney philosophy, right? Teaches you a lot about life. Little did we know we were watching an economic lesson when we were watching Dumbo's kids. But that elephant to me is wrecking shop right now. I mean, it knows what's going on. People go, what do you mean it's wrecking shop? 7% deficits GDP, right? You know, debt, $34 trillion. The elephant's wrecking shop. The guy that was interviewing me was posting it like saying, isn't this guy a complete idiot? And I said, well, it troubles me that he doesn't have better answers to these questions, because it tells me that he's not going down the same research rabbit holes that you and I have about trying to understand how the world is different. But I think that that's one of the things, and I'm kind of going on here, but you're gonna have to really, and I don't really know any other way to take advantage of this other than quote unquote trading, other than being active managers, because I think you're gonna continue to see this bipolar two-pole system where we get a piece of news and an instant reaction is more histrionic, and then the later reaction reflects reality in a fiat world, right? Like, and it's one of those things where, as I've seen this and I keep noticing it, I keep seeing it in other places, but I couldn't help but to think of that conversation when I was presented with that clip in an interview today, because, and I would love to hear your thoughts on it, but to me, it's a perfect example of the mental tug of war that are happening to so many investors in this environment, to some degree, me as well, because we need to confront the truth. We are not in a 1968 monetary system, right? And I think it's taken 50 years for the elephant to know he's not tethered. And like you said, rates get cut. I would expect I would expect the initial move for all of them to go down, because that's the move. That's the muscle memory. That's what you do. That's the move that the old timers look at the young guys and go, huh, you just don't know this because you're too young, right? Of course, it's duration's going to rally, all this. Well, you know, and then there's the serious possibility that can't. I'm just not going to play that. I'm not going to play those angles until I see it happening, right? Just because the muscle memory thing is so powerful. Do you have anything to add to that? I wanted to run that by you as kind of a, I don't know, kind of an idea or adding further color to the discussion we were having yesterday, but also see if you disagree. If you're playing for a break in the Fed, or for the Fed to lose control of the back end of the curve, like you and I have talked about, the fact that we see is a very real possibility. I just don't think you can jump into that trade until you start seeing it happening.
Yeah, I think we got to be careful not to conflate, like, you know, the 30-year going from 4.6 to 6 and them losing control, because those are different things. They can coincide, they can happen in the same season or whatever, but they're not the same. And we know at the end of the day, the Fed, you know, would not let the 30 go to 10 and just be like, well, this is unfortunate. Like, they would get in there and buy them, right? But maybe they don't buy them until after 6, something like that, for all we know. So it kind of goes both ways there. Sorry for the buzzer.
I thought you were having, I thought maybe you were under attack or something.
It's my shot clock. Actually, I use it on TaylorMade Macro. If someone says good question, no one's allowed to say that on my show. So what this does bring to mind is something, a very, very important and forgotten piece of U.S. history, and that is the greenback movement. The Union used greenbacks to help fund the Civil War, which was true paper money with no backing. And in some ways, it created a boom. There were people that loved it, and then there were people that hated it. So it kind of pitted classes against each other, where like farmers were all about it because it helped them make way more money. Obviously, fiscal conservatives wanted to get right back on the gold standard. There was a fight over it. They had their own political party that actually had a decent amount of seats in Congress. Like, they were real. So we have a history of doing this kind of stuff and then putting it back in the bottle at the same time. I say this to urge everyone, hey, go read about the greenback movement if you don't even know what I'm talking about, because I think it's instructive for the next 10, 20 years.
Well, another era of time that was similar to that was, I mean, not monetary, but you know, the old adage of when the government takes a right away, it doesn't ever give it back. It was Lincoln's suspension of habeas corpus, right? He gave it back. I just think those days are over. Meaning, we weren't the world reserve currency at that time. We didn't have 60-70% of global debt denominated in our currencies at that time. I don't know if that number is correct, but
you could argue that gives you more reason to do it over less. Like, I don't know.
I would think less, just because I think you're further removed from, I mean, look, I mean, I think the current environment is you look at all the fiscal madness and monetary madness that's occurred here in the United States in the last 5 years. And then you go look at the dollar index and it's sitting near a 22-year high, yeah. 20-year high, 19-year high, something like that. So I kind of think that I don't really think anybody's really thinking that way. I think the takeaway that a lot of the legislators and policymakers are taking is, hey, no matter how much we spend, there is no recourse, right? There's no kickback. There's no reverberation, right? There's no negative feedback loop. So why in the world would we stop? And I mean, that's really the origin story of MMT.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, when did MMT, MMT did not become popular in 2006, right? That idea started floating around X08-09 when myself included, everybody was looking at the TARP, and Warren Mosler was probably the only guy on the face of the earth that wasn't thinking that way at this time. But, you know, you and I have talked about it, just the inflation that we expected coming out of that. You know, it never showed up, you know?
Right.
So I
think that is what made them popular. It was like, they screamed for a decade, like, this is an inflationary. And the next thing you knew, like, we couldn't even create inflation if we tried. And they were like, yeah, I told you. So here's our menu of options. And everyone's like, yeah, let's try that.
Yeah, let's give it a try. You know, obviously, I think MMT is a joke in the long run. But when you go back and restudy the tenets of MMT in a fiat world, I think that they've got it more right than the Fed does.
Yeah, there's just no doubt about it.
Yeah. And especially in an MMT world, especially in this world where you're watching. Now, here's the thing that I do find frustrating. To analyze the dollar in a vacuum and talk about it the way so many MMTers do, to me is to start off wrong footed, meaning. And this kind of is akin to my argument about higher rates equaling higher inflation. I think that that's true, but I also think it's environmentally dependent. Meaning, I think 100%. you need to have the right backdrop. And so, and I kind of extrapolate that over to the MMT crowd, because you're like, hey, yes, what you're saying is true when you're looking at the dollar as it relates to the US, but it won't stay that way, because eventually, right, if for no other reason other than people getting ticked and annoyed at the fact that we can run reckless deficits and reckless debt levels, and our currency isn't subject to the, you know, to market, you know what I mean? Like that bulletproof aspect of the US dollar. And you've already heard countries make comments about this. You've heard Russia make comments about it. China's made comments about it. It's kind of funny because, you know, you look back 10 years ago and we're all sitting there, everybody in the world's going, hey, you know, or I had a, maybe it was more than 10 years ago, but remember we went through that whole thing. Oh, China's currency manipulators. They're purposely holding down the price. That conversation, and I think rightly so, is flipped sort of, it's not manipulation per se, but those comments are now being said about the US, right?
Yeah. And the funny thing about China is now they're, well, it's been for a while, honestly, but they intervene heavily to make sure the currency stays strong, not weak.
Yeah. Which it cracks me up every time I hear a politician. Well, they're falsely, they're depressing the price in the current. And you're like, dude, that was 10 years ago. You got to catch up. Right.
Yep.
Speaking of China, I've been paying attention to that. Where are we at on that? I know they're pumping stimulus. I saw a really interesting chart today looking at the Hong Kong, stock index. Right. And, it was talking about this certain – I'm forgetting. I should have – once again, lesson, I should have set it aside. I was too busy. But it had done something that every single time it had done that in the past 30-some years signified the end of a bear market. You know, if you're going to play Chinese stocks, it does seem to me when you look at what they're doing on the stimulus side of things, and you look at that chart. I'm not in any way advocating for people to go out and buy Chinese stocks. It does make some sense, though. I would not be surprised if those are a pretty big buy right now. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean Chinese stocks and Hong Kong stocks. I mean they were obliterated. So. But I like FXI, the big ETF for China, it's already up almost 30% off its lows. So it's already had a nice move higher. Same thing in Hong Kong's done pretty well off its lows. But if you look at credit creation, it's really not that great. And if you look at housing, it's still a dumpster fire in China. So the if your whole thesis is like, look, it just got way too cheap, so just buy it. Like, fair enough. That makes sense. But if your argument is like, oh, the economy is like really turning the corner here and it's starting to boom, like that's just not true. So it's a tough one.
Boy, add that to the tough one stack. I can't even see over it anymore. What else do we notice today before droning on too long? Like I said, I didn't really see anything of note. Other than those earnings reports, it is fascinating too, because I see people posting, you know, pictures of the Atlanta Fed or GDP Nowcast or whatever they call that thing going, somebody's lying here. You know, it's always a conspiracy.
Oh
right?
Boy. Yeah.
I think it's just another picture of how insane this environment is. Meaning I don't think you'd ever see bellwethers struggling the way that those are. And then you look over and you're looking at, you know, inflation adjusted growth at 4%+. It's just a wild new world. What else did you notice today? Anything else catch your eye?
Yeah, one little thing. We were just talking about China, came to mind, is iPhone shipments have jumped 12% between last month and this month in China. So that's the good news for Apple. The bad news is it's because they slashed their prices. So they're having, this is kind of a common theme for Western companies in China. Like if you want to keep your market share or anything even resembling it, you better slash prices.
How much is the price of the yuan devalued against the dollar in the last 2 years?
I'll look, but not much.
Maybe like 5%, something like that.
They've borderline pegged it. So let me look.
For now, I would love to know what their treasury holdings are. I know they released that data. I just don't know if it can really be trusted.
Yeah, they're still very high. They're clearly trying to, as much as they can, move as, you know, a lot of that to gold. So, yeah, I'll go from the dead low. Let's see here.
It was like 650, wasn't it?
So from where you got to at the bottom in 2022 to now, about 16%, which is decent.
Well,
but at the same time, like you're basically right back to where you were in 2019, so it's not that big a deal.
Yeah, but I mean that's eerily close to the price cuts that Apple's throwing out there, right?
So if you go from the lowest level for the yuan in offshore yuan, speaking of, but in 2019 to now, you're like 1% lower.
Yeah. So I wonder what that signals then. See, I was under the impression that a lot of that iPhone weakness was just the Chinese government cracking down, but it appears that there is some price sensitivity there too. I mean, I would have expected some price sensitivity. That data point brings up as many questions as it answers for me. What do we make of that? I thought the whole drop in iPhone orders had to do with the government cracking down on iPhones for government workers.
No, I wouldn't say that. I think Huawei came out with a great phone that people like too. I mean, yeah, that was a big part of it.
Yep.
So it's like for Tesla, like Teslas are still cool. People still want them. But when you compare it to what you can get from BYD for the price, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So they have to slash the price to move them.
Well, I mean, Tesla did do a model revamp. Heard about that? It's like they changed the headlights and they called it like the new revamp Model 3 or something like that.
Jeez.
Yeah, it was pretty.
I don't know if you saw. There was a tweet out today showing where Baidu, I think it was supposed to be doing the big deal with Tesla. Kind of came out and said, "Yeah, no."
Yeah, no. I don't know. That stock,
and we rallied like 15% that day.
That stock still looks in trouble to me. I mean, fundamentally, of course, it's in trouble. I still don't understand why the Tesla bulls are not concerned when you look at. I mean, you don't even need to really extrapolate out. You got an automobile company trading at 45 times earnings. It's got revenues down 10% year over year. I mean, with margins getting crushed across the board. And then here's the deal. You know, I don't know, when you look at the current makeup of the EV market, I'm not sure that Tesla will get those prices back to where they were. I mean, eventually I would think, you know, via inflation, but I mean, like,
right.
I don't know. I don't know that that's coming back.
Like, inflation adjusted pricing power is dead.
Yeah.
It just is. Even when you go inside China, the price wars between their different companies is so like violent and strong. They're making pretty decent cars for like $8,000 in American dollars. Now they're small and stuff, but like that's an EV with like 200 mile range, like $8,000.
How are they even doing that? How is they've got to be losing money?
It's probably a combination of that and heavy subsidies. I mean, America has really cheap electricity, and theirs is like 30-40% cheaper than ours.
Wow.
So stuff like that goes a long way. And they have the entire supply chain in-house. So they're doing, you know, from the bottom up, giant, you know, scaled up factories for every little part of the auto and the battery supply chains, so they can do it all cheaper.
They are truly vertically integrated, and by that I mean the government is at the top of that chain. I mean, the whole thing is right. The whole thing is wired tight. All right, man. What else do we got? And anything else you're looking at for this week? Do we have a CPI report coming out?
Not this week.
Oh, that next week.
Really, truly, the data for the rest of this week is just a nothing burger. But yes, we have CPI on the 15th.
Stock market not really acting like the way we thought coming into this week. I mean, it's just one day, but I was expecting more of an upward move.
Dealers got into positive gamma and the whole thing just went to sleep.
Yeah, that is truly what it feels like. Unless somebody's coming out with an earnings report, it looks like everything's just dead asleep at the wheel.
Yep. Wednesday will be a big one.
Yeah, it kind of brings into that whole sell in May, go away thing. And here's how this will work. If we advocate to sell in May and go away, you're going to have a monster summer rally. If we don't, there's going to be mass volatility.
Bank of America came out and said, don't worry about selling May. And I was just like, oh man, I want to sell in May now.
Yep. You got to play the other side of that one. All right, pal. Well, thank you very much as always. And thank you guys for joining us. We will be back tomorrow. I'm going to be on an airplane. So Chase is going to be doing the dots solo tomorrow. And we'll be back with the show on Friday. So until we see you then. You're listening to the Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
The opinions expressed in this program are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor.